You're listening to a Zone Radio podcast, zoneradio.co.za.
This gardening feature is brought to you by Harry Humans Garden Centre.
Hi, I'm Jeremy, owner of Harry Humans Garden Centre, and I'd like to invite you to come and experience some genuine retail therapy at our special garden centre, where our friendly and knowledgeable staff are waiting to help you. Come and find the perfect plant, beautiful pot, compost, potting or specialized soils, products to solve a pesky insect or fungal garden infection, and so much more. We strive to have a wide range and fair pricing. We're looking forward to seeing you soon at Harry Humans Garden Center.
It's just past 10:30 and time for the Garden Zone. Listen to me. Fumbling here for the Garden Zone with David Parker from Budding Inspiration and our sponsor, Jeremy Fenn from Harry Humans Garden Center. Welcome and welcome.
Thank you.
Morning.
Yes, and I'm glad that you all made it. And David, It's so different, David, to see you on the wrong side.
Hey, I don't know what the wrong side. To me. I'm feeling lost here, Jeremy. It's fun. No, it's all good. As you said, family, I came stumbling in a bit late. I have got a lot of sick staff at the moment, unfortunately. Yes. So I was battling to get here, but we're here and we're going to chat.
Well, we're glad that you made it.
Thank you so much.
And you're here. What our topic this morning?
Common, I think, because we were talking about questions that you last time that people ask about.
Yes.
So what we're going to be talking about is like common garden afflictions, I called it. So that's our topic for today.
Right. So that's our topic, and now we're ready to get going.
Yeah. So David, if you could just kick us off.
I'm going to ask you questions, Jeremy. So one of the main problems I'm having at the moment, Jeremy, and it is the nightmares moles. I mean, that's just something that I'm dealing with. I am trying a very organic process using a Jay's fluid mixture, which I am using a mix and nozzle with. And obviously, lovely Doug from university was kind enough to give me some knowledge. And I'm busy trying to soak the whole lawn with the Jay's fluid.
Yeah.
And the idea with the Jeremy is that we get the smell. Obviously, the sterilization of the Jay's fluid and the smell is quite hectic to the moles. So the idea is that it's a very organic way to push them away. And obviously, what the theory is, and it's actually a very logical theory, think about it, is that the all the little critters that the moles hunt in the ground, obviously they won't die because it's just water, but they're going to become slightly sterilized, if that's a weird thing to say, Jeremy. I come from the Jay's fluid filtering through the entire area.
Move off from that area.
So that's what we're trying to do. So firstly, if the bugs move off, then the moles will move off. And secondly, if the bugs are still there a little bit, but they sort of taste like Jay's fluid, I know it sounds terrible, then maybe the moles aren't going to be attracted to them as much. So hopefully we'll see. But I've done it for a week now, and I'm not getting the best results, unfortunately, Jeremy.
Is this for the runimal?
Yeah. It's becoming a bit of a problem, I'm not going to lie.
Did I tell you about the ice cream bucket story?
No, but we talk about common problems. So tell me, Jeremy, because I am dying to know. No, I'll tell you why, Jeremy. It's because obviously the one catch for me is that I am very fond of my lawn, as you know, and my roses. And I use my own garden as a template for my clients, you know.
Yes.
And if I'm not getting my own lawn right, and I'm being very honest, obviously, about this, then it frustrates me because then I don't really know what to do for a client with moles unless we just literally prescribe the mole man, which is a bit of an expensive task, unfortunately. So, and also not guaranteed, Jeremy.
Yeah, exactly true. Yeah, so we're talking about two different type of moles. There's the runimal, which makes those sort of surface tunnels.
Yeah.
And then there's the dune rat mole, which makes those big mounds. Now, those ones are a problem just because you can't really get rid of them. But the runimal, someone was telling me about digging a hole the size of like a 5-liter ice cream tub.
Yeah.
And then burying this ice cream tub in the hole below the surface of the ground, right? In an area where these moles are very active. And then what happens is, as the mole comes along, it gets to the ice cream tub and then falls in it, and then it can't get out. And then you take it and you put it in the field 50 kilometers away from your house or whatever.
So how are you supposed to cover the bucket up then?
No, you don't cover it.
Okay.
So you make a hole.
Okay. So you leave the bucket. So the bucket will be below the 30 centimeters below the level in theory.
Yeah.
So that the mole would fall out the grass. Almost like falling off a cliff into the bucket type thing.
Is exactly
that
what you're talking about? Like a lemming.
Okay. Because they're blind, obviously, Jeremy. So it's going to go. And then you're saying that if I get in the right area, it should track over it and then just fall into it
and then it can't get out.
But obviously the 5 liters is important because I think the 2 liters are going to be too shallow on the sides.
And it might be able to get out of it.
I like that idea because that's a really organic way of trying something.
Yeah.
I will be honest, Jeremy, that I have I've got a Stella in my life, and Stella's my beautiful little pit bull puppy, and I love her, but she's also become a little bit of a nuisance in the grass. But I for the first time, so you're going to hear this, I love her more than I love my grass, so it's okay. I love that dog so much. But my point is that she also tries to get the moles, Jeremy.
You know,
they put their noses in and they scuffle a little bit. So yeah, I'm having that problem as well. So I realize that I've got a dog problem in my own home, but I absolutely adore her and she's just an amazing animal. So we just let her do what she wants to do.
Yeah.
You know what? We've been saying this for years, Jeremy. You never force a garden. You just let your garden adjust around your environment. Yeah. So what I've started doing is just putting up little things in place in that. So we've got a question.
No, Rory's comes here. Hello, Rory, baby. How are you? And I hope you had a good weekend. Rory says, but I have a recipe for deep fried mole.
Ooh. That'd be interesting.
That would be very interesting. I got the skewers, so we can
deep fried mole.
So that's a nice organic one, Jeremy. And then look, I did buy a product from you, but I'm going to be honest, Jeremy, the garlic based deterrent, just nothing works, man, you know. And I mean, I have labor at my disposal, Jeremy, and I'm even starting to get to the point where the effort to try and constantly manage is becoming a lot, you know. And when I'm doing a client's home and I'm going there for, let's say, an hour only to mow and that, there's not much I can really do every two weeks,
Jeremy.
Just
it's just a nightmare. Flatten the runs and see about it. And unfortunately, it is one of those things where they're also seasonal in terms of like being in the lawn, because maybe there's lawn caterpillar or lawn cricket very active. And then the moles are attracted to that as well. So
if you've got a lot of hardydars, Jeremy, as a common question, is that the hardydars keep showing you that you've got quite a lot of microactivity in your lawn.
You've probably got those lawn caterpillars or the lawn crickets.
Okay. And I mean, when I come out and I see them, I mean, you've got those lacquer deep holes. Is that a good or a bad thing, Jeremy, that the hardydars are going mad on your lawn? Are they helping you keep nature in balance? Or are they
depends on what your lawn looks like.
Okay.
If it's struggling, then the lawn caterpillars are winning.
Okay.
Yeah, because they eat the roots of the grass, and then you get those patches, and then you've tested for you've sprayed with a fungicide, so it's not a fungus that's causing the patches, the dry patches or whatever. And then you can do that test with a wet towel.
With the wet towel, we're going to mention, just lay it over a patch, and then in the morning
overnight, and see if you've got those little green and brownish, grayish caterpillars. Then you know you have to treat for those.
Perfect.
That'll
be like a lawn cricket, like a mixer nozzle with Cyper or something. Like
yeah, Cypermethrin, Carba spray. You also get that the Wonder product. It's a insecticide with fertilizer with insecticide.
Yeah, the Carba dust
mixed
stuff.
In. So that's quite an easy way of treating it, because you're just using that fertilizer that goes over the whole lawn, and then because the insecticide is in the fertilizer, it's doing two jobs.
Doing a good job. That makes sense. Because now I also want to make sure your grass is a bit stronger.
We have another tip. Good morning, Michelle. Michelle says, put your dog poop in the mole tunnel. It does work.
We were doing it at one stage. But as I said, my worry with that was if the dog doesn't know that, and my dog buried once, and then I think she asked. So that was... But we'll try that. I'll definitely try that.
Thank you, Michelle.
Yeah, I could definitely do that. It's one way of getting rid of the dog poop. Dig a hole and bury it.
Yeah.
I mean, the dog poop will also break down and you know, eventually feed the soil.
Yeah.
The only thing you have to worry about is with dog poop is sometimes pathogens and things like that.
Yeah, it's not actually the most healthiest poop in the world, is it? Like the grazing animals. That's because it's obviously we feed our dogs what we shouldn't be feeding them. But yeah, so you definitely try that one.
Yeah. No, there's plenty of these home recipes like mothballs, Jay's fluid, garlic and chili extracts that people put in the holes and things like that. We've talked about that guy that pours petrol down the hole and then blows up his whole lawn to try and get rid of the moles.
Oh, no, I'd love to see that.
I'm sure you'll find it on the internet.
No, the logic's covered.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
so I mean, that's just the thing, one of the aspects of the garden. But right now, Jeremy, as we talk, we're going into shady. A lot of shade, a lot of moisture, so
yeah, watering, fungus
watering must be decreased heavily at the moment. I think, Jeremy, if you're watering in the evening, stop watering in the evenings and start trying to focus maybe more on watering in the mornings.
Yeah,
If necessary, you want to let the water evaporate from the garden. And yeah, you're right. I mean, I've actually, funny enough, I had about three irrigation jobs tomorrow. Just minor little touch-ups and putting in transformers. But I kind of let all the clients know that they can turn their controllers off for the next week. I think the rain's going to be quite heavy. They say we're having snow all the way up our mountain ranges in the next 2 days, which is quite incredible. Yeah, so the temperature apparently drops about 8 degrees tomorrow. So,
yeah. So, no, it's winter is here.
It's going to be lovely. I always love winter. We just need a bit of rain. I've been watching the other forecasts. They say that the forecasting for our dams is looking a bit low, Jeremy. So
okay.
People need to be a bit water wise, a bit water conscious, which goes hand in hand with gardening. But obviously, I think since 2018, everyone has been slowly changing their gardens to a more indigenous, low maintenance setups, you know, Jeremy.
Yeah, definitely much more worthwhile having the more drought resistant, wind resistant, those sort of type of gardens and plantings.
100%.
Just so, makes everything more, much easier.
Yeah, no, it makes it. So I'd like to ask you, so now talking about common things in the show, indoor plants, Jeremy.
Yeah.
So obviously now what happens is I think the outdoor gets a bit closer. So we've still got our indoor plants. I used that product you recommended to me about a month ago, and 2 months ago. I must tell you, it's changed. My indoor plants are looking so much healthier. That was that Horticulture 611 liquid feed.
Okay.
Yeah, really good results on that at the moment. So, but in terms of indoor plants, have you got varieties and what is coming in the floor now that we can plant out and indoors? I mean, have you got any perennial annuals for us?
I don't know about annuals. Oh, you're talking about outdoors?
Yeah, well, for box planters and
that. Yes, so yeah.
For your patios and that. You know, as I said, the pansies. The garden gets a bit cold for people now, so they're
pansies and violas are there. Okay. Primulas are coming through. Yeah, the marigolds are always there, and lobelias. Yeah, but it's the primulas and the pansies and the
are looking good, coming through strong now.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, Jimmy, if those are in a pot on a balcony and that's north facing, and we're getting the heavy rains that are coming through, is that a problem for these? I mean, wet feet would be too much for them as well. So you obviously have to make sure you've got good drainage. I would imagine.
Yeah, it's the soil type. Yeah, I'm more and more recommending, even with the potting soils, to add perlite.
Okay.
I'm just finding that even though it's supposed to be a potting mix, that
they've been heavy.
Holding the water too much, and just having that 10%, 15% perlite in the mix is just like covering your bases. It's just making sure that you don't have that problem where it just gets waterlogged.
Yeah, yeah.
And holds that too much water.
I've said this all the time, Jeremy. It's one of my, those little tips. But a lot of people don't realize that they should be putting a fabric layer between their stone and their soil in a pot. Mm-hmm. It is highly important because the stone has a lot of gaps compared to the soil, and the water will pull the soil through the stone chip in time as you water, and that will clog up the stone and do the opposite to what you think is happening. So it's very important that when you put a layer of stone in any pot, Jeremy, be it a small hand pot or a big pot, you must have a layer of that covers that stone so that the two don't mix, and that will always allow your drainage to be good, to be honest. So that's something that just a good tip for people, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
And what is your point of view on levels of stone to sand ratio in a pot? Just out of curiosity, should it be a third stone and two-thirds soil?
The main thing with the stone is and that geofabric layer is to make sure that the bottom of the pot doesn't get clogged up, and the holes get clogged up. So if you the stone layer is there, just as a buffer zone. So if it's maybe 5 centimeters or 10 centimeters, whatever, that's fine. But you just want to make sure that you've got that layer, and then your geofabric layer, and then obviously important as well is the composition of that potting soil. That potting soil
and feet, I would imagine, could be important because I've seen where you don't realize it, the good stone, good drainage, but it's a flat pot and it's on a beautiful flat surface.
Yeah,
and the hole's literally, it's just literally being, although it will seep out, remember that makes it go a lot slower to drain. So the water sits there. So again, wet feet. So it's very important
when
to raise your pots a little bit.
Yeah, exactly.
Use some feet so that the water can escape.
Yeah, it's the heavy rains.
Yeah.
You can't control.
No.
If the pots are outside on the patio that's not covered or in the garden, the pot feet are very important.
Yeah, 100%.
So that layer, the stone layer, the fabric layer, the pot feet, and then the quality of the potting soil with a little bit of, as I said, the perlite.
100%. And a weird thing, say, a base can be quite important as well, and you've got to monitor it. It can be a bit frustrating if you have a base and it gets water full quite quickly, because you've got to figure out how to empty it. But I mentioned that, Jeremy, because I had a client in Camps Bay. Beautiful job on a deck, and it's still these little things, and these are why we do the show, to give people some input. And over about a year period, we suddenly noticed that the pot was bowing. And when we actually moved it, the whole deck had started to rot because nobody had just thought that even though it was raised on feet, it wasn't in a, on a base. The second problem was even if it was on a base, I would imagine, Jeremy, that the water from the base would have just eventually started overflowing if nobody was dealing with it, and it literally rots as well. So it's important to note if you're putting your pots on a wood decking or something, you might have to monitor that, move it, make sure that you don't let your deck rot, because it can happen. I've seen it and we've had to deal with it. And that can turn into be quite an expensive task just for a pot, you know, Jeremy. So very important to monitor that type of thing, in my opinion, you know.
Definitely, definitely.
And it's obviously hard to remove a base from a pot that's constantly there. So it might make sense that you actually get your pot raised on feet and get a smaller base that slides under that you can maneuver and remove instead of a permanent one. But just some advice for people and some feedback.
Yeah, that's definitely another option. So the pot feet and the sliding tray, it's just sometimes it doesn't look as good.
No, 100%. Look as aesthetic as nice. Value does play an important role, especially in those cancer areas. Unfortunately, it's a true story.
But you could put, if the tray is big enough, you could put feet underneath the pot in the tray.
In the tray, yeah.
And then that also helps, but it doesn't really help with, so that helps with the pot and the plants, but it doesn't help with the deck.
Yeah.
Because there's still going to be water.
No, it's quite amazing, all these little things. I mean, what we do is I sort of tell my guys when we go to the house, if it's a nice day, to blow the water out.
Yeah.
I know it seems silly, but blow it out hard, get it out and blow it dry to a degree, because that's the only way you're gonna get it out if the clients aren't doing it themselves, you know. So we try and do that to help. But And in terms of feeding the garden now, Jeremy, I mean, everything, you know, we keep saying this, so everything goes dormant. Everything slows down. We're not going to say dormant in South Africa. However, it's quite funny because I always say to you, doing this for years, but I'm looking out my window and I've got this bougainvillea, which is going nuts at the moment. Like growing a half a meter a day and flowering. But again, remember, in Northern Hemisphere, it is summer and the growing season for these Northern Hemisphere plants. So not everything is dormant. So you can feed, you know, like the bougainvillea would love a bit of nitrogen now and a bit of potassium for its flowers. So you just got to know what to feed, I think. But if you're feeding your garden now and you're looking for, I think, a good organic-based feed, Jeremy, a six-month slow release just to give some elements back, some nutrients to the trees. And then I had a client ask me about cutting and pruning trees now, and it's pretty obvious. I said, look, it won't make much difference now because the growing period is only going to be when spring comes. So if I cut them now or cut them before spring, it's neither much of a difference here. I would prefer to cut them now, I told the client, because I would like to get a bit more sun into the garden for them. So if you are looking at doing some tree cutting or pruning, it is a good time to prune now and cut and put some organic feed for that root so that in spring it does slowly take it and grow again. And that if that helps get some more sun to the garden, that's a bonus, especially
if you're lawning that. I think we talked about last time when you're doing the cuts, just be careful how you cut so that you don't get the water sitting on the bigger branches. Yeah, and then like a tree seal. If it's a big branch, you want to paint some of that tree seal on it so you don't get any fungus or water sitting.
100%. Especially if it's on the stem of the tree, the main life support of the bark, obviously, that'd be good to paint that so it seals it. You want to get that in there. And Jerry, the beetle that's around Cape Town at the moment, it's not too bad. I know that. I can see your face. But it's more out that side. I just know that some of the estates like Silvertree and, Steamer Golf State, they're not allowing me to even bring rubbish in on my trailer, which is quite incredible, actually. And obviously, that just because they're worried that you're going to be transferring it. But we haven't had any problems this side of the world. I haven't seen any articles.
Not that I know of. I know it's in Cape Town. What is it called? That polyphagus?
Yeah.
A shot ball? Ball?
What is the tree that they're going for?
Can't remember.
Okay. It makes two of us. I'm asking questions. Should note that. So I'll chat about that. Maybe just mention that to the people next time in 2 weeks. We can just.
But they're very conscious of moving garden refuse around.
Yes.
Because that's where it could be in the tree, and then it's going into another area.
100%.
And all of a sudden it's infecting everything.
Well, it's like weeding, and you just nailed something else. I always tell everybody, especially my guys, don't just, when you're weeding, weed straight into a bag or cut a diseased plant straight into a bag to get rid of straight away. If you like drop it on your lawn, my guys weed and then they'll make a pile of thing. And I said, but you know what's happening, guys, is you literally, all the seeds are going to just shake off right there. So it's very important to try and take your weed straight out of an area and straight into a bag to stop the germination process, obviously, Jeremy.
Yeah, definitely.
But sure.
Yeah, I was going to tell you a little bit about talking about that slow release fertilizer.
Yes.
Talborn Organics is one of the fertilizer brands that we stock. And they turned 25
awesome.
This year. and they're based in Joburg, but they came down and did a birthday day conference kind of thing. Was it last week or the week before? Last week, maybe. Anyway, it was out in Stellenbosch at Devon Vale or something like that, golf estate. And yeah, very nice. They had some very interesting speakers and stuff, and we were just talking about their journey and how some of their clients have gone like totally organic on their farms and things like that. Because they have two branches. They've got the retail market, obviously, which is why I'm a customer. And they do the granular fertilizer. And then they also do, now they brought in the Nourish liquid range. And then they have the agricultural, like the proper farmers that are using their products as well.
Because that's hundreds of kilos.
Yeah, it's a different animal.
Scale, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, it was very interesting. There was a guy, Berti, from Priska in the Northern Cape. And he gave us, he was a very interesting guy. And talking about his farm and how Talborn has definitely helped him, because he's like doing old world wheats, and yeah, he does these. It's regenerative farming. I don't know if you've. I think I've talked about it before. Yeah. So they have like vines, and then they bring the pigs in a tractor, and well, not in a tractor, but one of those like enclosures, and then the piglets move through, and they eat all the weeds and stuff, and then they bring in the goats, and the goats take off the bigger things, and then they bring in the cows. The cows come through, and then they poop there, they eat, and then they poop, and then it's like a whole big thing. But very he said true. Like the Talborn just gives them an extra edge just because of the quality of the fertilizer. No, yeah, it's amazing, so that was quite an interesting time.
You don't realize what goes into that like little 2 kilo bag, you know. Everyone just comes in and thinks they're buying, but it takes a lot of effort, a lot of input. You know, the carrying medium has to be right, Jeremy, that we've discussed and we've just spoken about. I know it's not Talborn, but we're just spoken about the carbon dust range.
Yes.
Does Talborn do something like that?
No, they don't do any.
Are you going to stock any of those new liquid feeds at Nourish Range?
I do have it.
Oh, wow. Let's come and see that, actually.
Yeah.
I'll definitely pop in and come and have a look.
Yeah, it's like one of the sugar beet extracts.
I think, you know, the problem in this world, Jim, is like everything in this world. There's just so much available at your fingertips.
Yeah, choice.
Once you get the right product and you learn it and you enjoy it and you do the right balance, it's all about balance, because you do... I mentioned that, but I had a client who his lawn has gone completely sideways on him, like loads of weed, and it wasn't that bad. And it was quite funny because he asked me once what to feed, and I said, and this was before Christmas about 2 years ago, and I said, no, you must do your turbo grass now. Mm-hmm. Now's the time. And then he's taken that now, and all he's done, Jeremy, is feed turbo grass. And what he's done is he's actually made his grass so weak because he's been forcing it to grow with this like 10-1-1 nitrogen, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's good once off, Jeremy, but anything like that too much is just not going to be good at all, because what's happened is the roots have gotten like dormant now, and because he's just did one now, and basically what's happened is he's now forcing his grass to grow, and it's become patchy. When his guy mowed it short, it looked terrible, and it's pretty much dying on him. So what's happened is the weeds have gripped it now and taken infestation. So feeding balance is very important, and
that's sort of thing. But that grass will hopefully come back quite quickly.
It will come back. Yeah, unfortunately, it's a bit too much weed to spray now.
Yes.
So I've actually encouraged him to feed the roots
of
the grass just to strengthen it. Yeah, there we go. Just to let it get through winter. And then obviously we're going to have to start a project in September, October. Right, Jeremy, thank you so much. Yeah. Amazing.
Thank you.
So I didn't let you know I was popping in, and I just ran in on you guys. I really do appreciate you all. I just missed 2 weeks ago because work's been quite busy, and today just a lot of sick staff. So I'm glad I could get you.
Yeah. So, David, well, we're glad to have you back. We really are. Do you want to give out your number, please, David?
No. Just teasing. All the time, anytime. 07, and we do appreciate you guys. Thank you so much. 073-247-0351. And obviously you can catch Jeremy and Harry Goodman's on Cormickey Road.
That's right. And and they have a line, a main line number, do they?
We do have a telephone number, yes. Right, so we still have one of those. 021-785-3201.
Thank you so much for coming.
I'm going to give Jeremy's personal number out. Thank you, Jeremy. Thank you so much.
Have a lekker day. Bye, and guys. Be safe out there.
Cheers, thank guys. You.
Bye. Cheers.
This gardening feature was brought to you by Harry Humans Garden Center.
Hi, I'm Jeremy, owner of Harry Humans Garden Center, and I'd like to invite you to come and experience some genuine retail therapy at our special garden center, where our friendly and knowledgeable staff are waiting to help you. Come and find the perfect plant, beautiful pot, compost, potting or specialized soils, products to solve a pesky insect or fungal garden infection, and so much more. We strive to have a wide range and fair pricing. We're looking forward to seeing you soon at Harry Humann's Garden Center.